Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of June, recording at 9:45 p.m. British Summer Time. Well, the Friday audio always deals with the big picture, long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. And, unusually, I'm going to start with a sporting comparison here tonight. First, England knocked out of the European Cup last night, and tonight, well, Greece beat France. So really, the European Cup's turning out to be a little bit like the markets, meaning very difficult to predict at this time. And the reason for that, let's start with stock markets, is because they're at a transitional stage. And the transitional stage marks the gradual ending of that very good medium-term technical bull that we saw commencing March last year and carrying into this year, when it gradually lost momentum and its markets have basically been reacting and or meandering sideways. And that creates choppy sort of action that you've been seeing that is not all that easy to deal with for certain. Now, I got to say, in looking, although this is the long-term outlook, and looking at some of the short-term action, here, for instance, we have seen a steadier performance in Asia today. That's following Wall Street yesterday. Europe a bit mixed in here today, some up, some down. Mostly, most of them on the upside, but not significantly at all. The Dow closed down nearly 72 points. That was near the low of the day, as was the S&P down 6. But the NASDAQ composite was up nearly 10. And I'm looking at the NASDAQ September futures contract, which closed up 12 at 15.05. I've got a short position there, or my latest short positions there, which are losing money at the moment. And I regard the NASDAQ as a little bit of a lead indicator, as you know. So at this stage, we can't say that these tests of the upper boundaries here are over. And as a matter of fact, one stock market, which I had mentioned previously, and that was Australia, that S&P/ASX 200 index had pushed to a new all-time high. I think that was last week. And we've had the transports index in the U.S. move to its highest level for a number of years, I think going back to before 2000, although it's not a new all-time high for that index. So it's balanced in here. My feeling is that we're still going to encounter quite a bit of resistance near the higher side of these trading ranges for the European markets. But there is one script that I feel is still really quite viable, and it's a very important one, and that is that all that liquidity sloshing around the system created by the Bank of Japan, the US Federal Reserve, etc., could well pump these asset bubbles up a little bit further here over the next few months. That's the possibility. I think it's less than a 50-50 chance, and maybe considerably less, but it is a possibility. And until I see some clear technical evidence of real selling pressure relative to demand coming in at the higher side of these trading ranges, that scenario, pumping the bubbles a little bit further upwards, has to remain very much in contention. Okay, now, what about the longer term, though? I maintain that as interest rates go up, and all right, people are saying that they're not going to go up all that much because growth will slow. Well, that would help the stock market all that much. So I do feel that in line with the electoral cycle, get into next year and 2006, that those will be tough years for stock markets. They usually are, and particularly if this remains a secular bear market for Wall Street, which every historic precedent, I would say, of post-bubble action suggests it is. So this is an environment where I would be very careful in saying that we're in a secular bear market. That's not by any means a mega disaster, but it does mean that we don't have any type of buy and hold environment such as we had in the 1980s and 1990s. We're going to have to be very careful. It's more of a trading environment. If there's a fair amount of inflation over the next 10 to 15 years, and you know my view, that inflation is going to be gradually on the rise. It's not going to be rampant. It's not going to be runaway. We won't see any, in my view, we won't see any 1970s type very high inflation and strong inflationary mentality among the public at large during the next few years, but I'd be surprised if we don't see it sometime in the, if not this decade, in the decade that follows, because I maintain, as I said in my article today and comment of the day, that the government central banks will continue to pump up liquidity every time there's just a whiff of deflation or recession in the air. And they'll continue to do that until inflation is very much in the public consciousness and becomes public enemy number one, as we last saw in the late 1970s and early 1980s. So, how to actually play it? Well, carefully, as I've said before. I think extremely carefully. I've been raising cash. As you know, I do like having a lot of cash, bottom line. Captive investors, or if you have equities, I'd be overweight in defensive areas. I would favor high-yielding stocks. I would favor resources stocks, and that would include oil and mining shares. But, you know, a lot of those mining shares are on fairly pricey multiples, so I think I prefer the oils overall, even though oil's in a medium-term correction, but more on that a little later. But cash would be a big favorite of mine in here. Well, it is a big favorite of mine and will remain so, I think, for quite some time. If there's one developed market that I like more than any others over the next decade or more, it's Japan. It's a runaway choice. Valuations are competitive, and certainly Japan is committed to keeping interest rates down and printing money until it defeats the deflation and gets us some sort of, let's get something much closer to a self-sustaining economic recovery than we've seen for a very long time. Also, it's obviously completely out of sync in terms of the big secular trend with Wall Street, since Japan was a wallflower during most of the 1990s while Wall Street and some other markets roared. My favorite area by far for the very long term remains the Asian emerging markets, and at the top of my list there would be India, which I think is an incredibly exciting story overall. And the valuations are, well, not bad at current levels off the highs that we saw in January. But I don't like the chart action that much. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if India didn't drift and sag a little bit lower over the next few months, and it may well have a choppy period and certainly a downward bias from time to time in 2005 and 2006. But this is a market that during the next up phase for global stock markets, and that would probably apply if I were wrong about markets for the rest of this year, as some of the cheerleaders on CNBC and what's the other one, Bloomberg TV, would quite probably say. If there are meaningful upside gains to be had during the remainder of the year, I would wager that Japan and a number of the emerging markets would be very, very competitive in terms of their performance. But the fact that they've been lagging here in recent months makes me feel that the chances of a meaningful upside move by stock markets during the remainder of the year is a diminishing prospect overall. Okay, moving on to government bonds. They've been firming recently. The JGBs, where I would love to get back into another short position, were up a bit here today because there was a a whiff of further deflation in Japan. I think it was in consumer prices hadn't risen as much as had actually been expected. There are a number of shorts in that market. I would dearly love to see those short positions squeezed and push this market up a little bit. The U.S. ditto, the U.S. Treasury bonds, those have rallied. They're above where I covered my last short position, unlike the JGBs. And I would very much like to see these Treasury bonds rally a little bit further. Chart pattern suggests that they could, and that would be particularly true if the stock market came off. I maintain that the bull market in government bonds, the secular bull market that is, ended in June of last year, and that we are in the late stage of an extended phase of overall top formation development. And therefore, I will only be interested really in running short positions unless the markets are to fall so far and so fast that interest rates had short-term interest rates had also shot up to a point where they would have to come down again, then I might consider a technical rally. But I expect to be playing government bonds on the bear side really for quite some quite a number of years, subject to timing on the charts as always. In the currency markets, this has been as choppy as anything else, although with a bit less volatility here overall. But if there's one big theme that's emerging here, it is that, as I've been saying for the last couple of months, that the dollar's technical rally, which wasn't all that great, but it does appear to be over. And therefore, I would expect the dollar yen to eventually go down and test that 105 level. I would expect the euro to eventually move. It's good, dollar yen rather, is currently at 107.58. I would expect the euro, currently 121.74, to push back up and test its highs up around that 129 level. Probably move a little bit higher. Sterling could easily go back up and test the upper 180s, 190 region, maybe a little bit further. But I'm not in the dollar's going to collapse school. I was talking to Mark Glowry earlier today, who produces the reports currently on the C2F2 service, and is an esteemed colleague of mine. And he was asking me about the Australian dollar against the US dollar, with a view towards buying the Australian dollar. There's a yield advantage there, of course. It's seen quite a correction from the highs, and I can see that going up a bit. I'm not thrilled by the prospects in any currency markets here right now, which is why I haven't got a position myself. But if put a pistol to my head, as they say, and I'd be short the US dollar. Looking at the commodity markets, this is the most interesting area in my view, particularly the metals. I maintain that secular bull markets are underway. They will be exceptionally volatile. That just goes with the territory, particularly the industrial LME traded metals, which includes copper, which is also traded in the U.S. markets and a couple of other exchanges around the globe. Now, if the asset reflation story, pumping up the bubbles, is still intact, and I discussed that at the beginning of this audio comment, then my feeling is that while, yes, that would help stock markets, could even push up bond prices a little bit, but most of all, it would help the supply inelasticity trades, which have been very much my investment theme for the year. And I feel that following the shakeout that we saw, that we're still in an environment now of prices pushing back upwards somewhat because people overdid the selling against the background of the China slowdown story. Hedge funds, massive hedge fund liquidation had actually occurred there. And all the dust has settled, and a number of these supply and elasticity trades are still showing backwardations, indicating a shortage of nearby material, and that's causing them to push back up again. I still own the lead, as you know, and I still own silver, although my silver position is half what it was at its maximum level. I continue to trade that one on a baby steps, buy low, sell high within the range's basis. Now, I've mentioned the volatility in these supply and elasticity trades, and I've mentioned that they're in a secular bull market. But I do feel that what we're going to see in 2005 and 2006 is not going to be that helpful for these trades. That's because I would expect to see some concerns about global GDP growth, which may well slow down. If that's wrong, if we get China booming, if we get European economies improving even further, as the European governments and I believe the ECB are forecasting, and if the US continues to roll along at its current pace, then the metals will be in for a banner year, I would guess, albeit they'll have some big shakeouts within that period, because these are thin markets, and as I said before, it just goes with the territory. But my current thinking is that we need to be on the alert for economic slowdown in 2005 and 2006, and that will have a bearing on these metals, and we need to watch these backwardations, because if they move in back into contango for more than a day or two, indicating that the shortage of nearby material is over, then we would see a longer pause and maybe deeper corrections. Now, that has happened with the least supply inelastic of the supply inelasticity trades, which is oil. And the big backwardation that had existed for really in recent years, that's gone currently. It could reemerge again, but for that to reemerge, I think we really would need to see a significant disruption in oil supplies, or certainly the fear that we were going to see a significant disruption in oil supplies. But if it's only the fear, any return of the backwardation or further upside move in the crude oil price would be relatively short-lived. Now, unfortunately, there's quite a high risk that we would see some sort of terrorist-related disruption to oil supplies. And then there are the usual problems of a refiner can go down, a pipeline can burst somewhere else, a strike can take place, this type of thing. So really, with producers pumping at, not at capacity, but not all that far off capacity, that it's harder to increase supply from here on, at least to do so quickly, whereas a disruption could have a significant effect immediately in terms of psychology, and could cause that backwardation to reappear if it persisted beyond the very short term. But you know, I've been saying for a number of weeks that the oil price looked like it was susceptible to a medium-term consolidation. I think we have now very clear evidence that we are in that medium-term consolidation. I don't think the crude's going to go back to $30, as a lot of people are forecasting. But equally, I don't think it's going to go above 42 anytime this year, probably, unless we do get a terrorist attack or some other factor that really does revive supply concerns once again. Now, having said that, I don't like making forecasts over specific time periods all that much. I'm not just trying to hedge my views overall, but there's no way that one can do that really all that accurately. In other words, it's a guess, it's a hunch. And what I will do, as I have done all along, is look at the charts. The energy contract that does interest me the most remains natural gas. If that were to come back a bit, I would like to reopen my long position there and have another trade. And last but not least, let's see, orange juice does look like it's bottoming out, or this is the best evidence that we've seen this year that it's bottoming out, and it is at record all-time lows. But the risk is some churning action and base formation development over time, which will make it a little bit hard to trade. That's why I put in my in-the-money stop, which is quite a tight stop. It's not a technical stop. It's just to protect me against that contango and the swift move back down to retest the lows or some action of that kind. There's a very high chance, I would rate it at well over 50-50, that that would happen. So why do it? Why not just take the position out? Well, because I could get lucky. This is so depressed, so low, that if we got a significant bear squeeze, then the price could spike quite sharply, albeit only temporarily. Soybeans, interesting for the reasons I've mentioned. Great big backwardation there. There were people who are beginning to worry about hot, dry weather in the U.S. after cold, wet weather during the planting season had weakened and delayed the crop. So I think that's pretty much it at this stage, and therefore I will just say have an absolutely splendid weekend.